Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron, and in the studio, in the hot seat, I've now got Robs. Good morning.
Good morning. Another beautiful day in Raglan.
You always say that.
It's always a beautiful day.
It's always a beautiful day. So we often go into this relatively unprepared, and today, because we just had Dennis here, I don't even know what we're talking about. So, Robs, what are we talking about today?
Well, I was thinking, I knew you'd say something about me thinking every day is beautiful.
Oh, I see. You're trolling me.
Could I explain myself first?
Of course.
I think there's a feeling if it's a grey day and it's a rainy day, like it makes us feel different to if it's a sunny day.
Yeah.
For most people. And I don't always feel like happy, you know, soft, fluffy feelings on every single day. But I think there's a separation between the feelings that I've got and the actual nature around me. So when I'm saying it's a beautiful day, what I'm seeing out the window here is beautiful, soft palette of colours, tiny little raindrops, which give us life, Aaron, floating through the sky like little fairies, dropping down. Nice, quite a soft northerly wind there today. The light. You know, if you think of an artist, there's no weather which artists don't paint. And
they don't think,
that's horrible, I'm going to paint it, you know, because beauty's everywhere.
Yeah.
You get the moody grey skies, you get the beautiful, you know, vibrant blue skies and sunshine. So beyond my feelings, I'm seeing a beautiful world around me. And that is why I say every day is a beautiful day.
Fair enough. You're seeing it from the eyes of an artist. Perhaps. It is, you know, there's one thing about living out here is that, like, the grey days are not really like grey days in Hamilton, where it's kind of a little bit deadening and stifling in some ways. The grey days out here are usually quite wild, and that wind's going to keep picking up as well, so it will get quite wild out here and quite energising, energetic out here.
Yeah. I think as well, culturally, you know, whether it's a sunny, amazing, you know, hot day, or it's a grey, quite still, low energy day, we tend to do the same thing. We still have to drop the kids off at school, and we still have to go and do all the jobs that we need to do, and we don't always have the opportunity to sort of to live our lives reflecting, you know, how the climate affects our bodies and our energy levels. So I try and incorporate that into my life as well, and you know, that's part of nature connection, I guess. It's all sort of tuning into how you're feeling and how you want to express that in what you do each day. And it's culturally, it's really hard. You know, we're sort of rushing around, and there's many reasons to ignore the energy. But if you know, embrace the rainy days and the still days. And I do different things, and I do things which feel right on that day, which aren't necessarily the things I do on a high energy sunny day. So it's all part of nature connection. The big, big umbrella of nature connection.
Well, we still often do talk about the weather, even though we might be in offices when we'll ring someone in another town and say, what's happening up there?
It's probably the most common conversation starter, really, isn't
totally.
It?
Totally.
Even,
yeah.
You know, the size of the world, it's a famous sort of stereotype, I guess, of people in England talking about the weather, and definitely see it here.
It's a shared cultural experience to moan about the weather.
It is.
In the UK, and talk about the one good day in summer.
I feel there's a history to it as well. I feel it's such a, you know, if we were living on the land, and I know the birds and the plants and the trees talk about the weather a lot, it's probably their number one topic of conversation as well.
Yeah.
Because it totally affects everything you do if you're living off the land, and every spider spins a web. It wants to know where the wind's blowing from, because you don't want to open up a web and it's going to get branches and things and the wind blowing through it and broken, because it's quite a mission to build one.
Yeah,
and the birds building their nests at the moment, they're really conscious of it. So it's a sort of constant awareness which you know, the beings of nature have to have. And I feel we're beings of nature too. So I feel there's an older story to why we, you know, sort of seem to tend to bring a conversation to weather.
I've decided right at the start to try to walk to work as many days as possible, walk or bike, mostly to wake myself up, because I'm not really a morning person. But it does have that effect of bringing me a little bit closer to what's going on. you know, and I could see like it, there was slight, it was slightly misty this morning, but there was light, weird light on the hills across the other side of the harbour over Te Ako.
Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, it was, there was something different going on, and it was raining just before I left, but stopped as I left. It was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's helpful. I'd still have to worry about the laptop in my bag.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been trying, so, you know, obviously we talked a lot about the bush time, me spending time in the bush, but I've really, the last few years, been working on, you know, nature time being everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
In the studio, in town, in the supermarket. So I've been trying, we do a practice called shadow walking or fox walking, which is it's a way of moving, a sort of very sort of native way of moving.
Is that where you put the front part of your foot down first rather than the heel hitting the ground?
Yeah, it's sort of, you adapt to terrains and to... you know, the gradient of slopes and things, but it's a way of moving quite still and quietly, but without looking at the ground.
Right.
And it helps to do it barefoot and having a low impact. You know, if we walk quite fast and sort of with a busy mind and a busy body, then that's sort of reflected to what you experience from a nature perspective. You know, the birds will, you know, be aware of you from quite a distance, and it compromises what you experience, whereas if you move in a sort of slower, steady, really aware way, you know, sometimes the birds won't even feel a need to fly away from you. But the point I'm making is that you might see me around the supermarket looking a bit weird.
Right.
I'm trying to move in that way, you know, in all aspects of my life now.
It's a bit of a heads up.
It's a good challenge, so if you see me, you know, keeping the queue a bit slow because I'm moving a bit slowly and a bit different to other people, that's what I'm up to.
How will you handle crossing the road?
I don't want to obviously get hit by a car. But it's not a very big road to cross.
No, I mean, it's not like we have a motorway here.
Nah, not like those big ones. It was you that told me about the big sort of highway in America, and a guy was teaching blind people to cross it. Is that your story?
No, that's not my story. I don't know. What is that story? I want to know now.
Okay.
That sounds like a slightly risky maneuver.
Yeah, yeah. Nah, I'll think it was quite interesting, and it definitely sort of fits into natural awareness.
With a massive incentive built in.
Yeah, yeah. Life or death. But we'll revisit that another time.
I'm going to have to Google this after our show to see what that's all about. So did you have something specific you wanted to talk about today, or did you want to let it flow?
I've a few things. I've been inventing quite a few things recently.
Okay.
So that might be quite a bit cool. We're doing knife making at Kuratau at the moment. Kuratau is the school that I run up on the mountain, nature school. And for knife making, it's pretty handy to have a grinder, to have a bench grinder and a sander. And we don't have any power where we are. And, you know, there's a few dangers of using powerful machines as well. So I've invented a bicycle-powered bench grinder.
Uh-huh.
And it works great. I'm really happy with it. And I got an old Singer sewing machine, the old pedal ones.
Yeah.
And I took that apart. And that's today becoming my sort of bench sander as well.
Okay, all right.
So that's been a cool process, and the kids have got right into it and pretty excited.
For the uninitiated, so what age kids? Like building, making knives.
Five and up, making
knives.
Yeah, well, we use knives a lot, and we also lose knives a lot. So,
so that's actually the biggest danger with working with knives and small children, is just they keep losing them.
It's been a great teacher using knives, and I guess it's an incentive because, you know, whether you're 5 years old or 50, if you're using a knife for the first time, you're probably quite likely to nick yourself with it. But I never really felt unsafe in 5-6 years of running Kuratau with the kids and their blades.
Some people would be very uncomfortable with this. I mean, we live in a world where they've made scissors out of plastic to make them safer. So what's the thinking behind children and knives in the environment you've created?
Well, we're learning to live, and we're not just using knives, you know, we're creating things and we're using tools, and, you know, you know, I get, you know, at school, I remember the scissors we used to, you know, you're just cutting paper at school, so it sort of works. But you do woodworking at school as well, and it's quite dangerous and pointless to use a blunt saw, and a saw is far more dangerous than the knife in terms of the cut it gives you.
Yeah.
But it's exciting, it's engaging for the kids, but it really does demand a lot of awareness and care while doing it. And that can be quite, and focus, you know, and that can be quite a difficult for some kids to find in some activities. So an activity, I guess, similar to climbing trees and certain activities which have an element of danger.
Yeah.
You know, I feel we do those, and sometimes we're even drawn to those because of a sort of an innate need to have that incentive to stretch ourselves and to really develop that awareness and find the boundaries and what's okay. And it's a held space, obviously. It's not a sort of free-for-all.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely you know, rules that we have to that we, and really need to be respected to keep everyone safe using anything sharp.
What, such as?
It's a three-pronged rule book with knife making. Number one is every knife has a sheath, and if it's not being used, it always goes back in the sheath.
Yeah.
Number two, I guess an extension of that is if we're walking around, you never walk around with an open blade.
Yeah.
You know, it's got the sheath. We sit down, I guess, a blood bubble. So if I had a knife in my hand or I stretch my arm out around me and do a circle, no one's allowed within that circle.
Yeah.
So if I am pushing hard against a piece of wood and I sort of slip, then there's no danger to anyone else.
Right, yeah.
And more of a technique, always away from your body, you know, away from your hand.
If you follow these,
then there's actually very, very little, well, no chance really of any danger to yourself or anyone.
I guess, especially in this modern era, if you say to kids, we're going to give you a knife, immediately you've got their attention 100% because they're not used to being given things like that.
Yeah.
And so they're going to, when you say, here are the rules for the knife before I give it to you, they're going to pay attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you came to cut a tile and you watched, similarly with fire lighting, you know, if someone's never had a fire before and, you know, or had the freedom to sort of build and tend to a fire, that can be, you know, the excitement can be a bit overpowering and cause someone to make a mistake, and similar with a knife, you know, if you never have it. But if you're just so used to using these tools, if you came and watched the kids, you know, you probably wouldn't bat an eyelid, really, because it's so natural, they're so, you know, accustomed to the blade and how to use it, and actually really skilled at using it, you know, knowing how to do different sorts of cuts, and it's a great teacher of learning, you know, the grains of wood and the different trees and hardness and softness and color and smell, and it's a really sort of multi-sensory experience to work with wood in that way.
I know, having spent time in the islands when I was a kid, like there's kids, little kids running around with big machetes there, like, and everyone just uses them, and because it's the major tool for doing stuff around the house and the village and the plantation and and that's how you get into a coconut. Or they have these horrible-looking stakes. If you fell on it, you would impale yourself really effectively, but that sticking out of the ground at waist height, and that's how you get the husk off the coconut. And everyone knows how to do that. Yeah.
Yep. I think, when you're living in that way, it's just, you know, it's just the tools that we use to make life easier for ourselves. And
I guess people are wondering if you have many accidents.
Very, 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 very few.
Yeah.
Very, very few. I think everyone, like I said, all ages, to use a knife for the first time, they're in part of their learning, there'll be a time when you nick yourself and like, oh, yeah, it's sharp, you know.
Yeah.
That's the knife telling you, like, yep, you know, you do actually need to respect this tool and be really aware when you're using it.
Yeah.
But no, we've not really had any accidents ever at Kuratau.
Yeah.
To know, you know, nothing. Than a bump in the bruise or things like that.
Is there a different? I mean, you've got a different energy going on than a lot of other class situations, I guess. I'm trying to figure out how to communicate that across on the radio. like the environment you've created.
It doesn't feel, to me or to anyone, it doesn't really feel like a class. I guess, you know, I'd never call it a class. It's an offering. I'm holding the space and the kids come in and it's our space, you know. We're almost equals. I'm the elder of the space and, you know, sort of my job to oversee and make sure everyone's sort of physically and emotionally safe within that. But in terms of the dynamics of the day, it's like a family, you know. Everyone matters, and what everyone's passions are matters, and how everyone's feeling. And, you know, like I said, with the weather, that really dictates what we do. And we come together and we listen to each other and we find a way to support everyone to feel happy, that, you know, to get the most out of the day. And, you know, sometimes there's compromise and sometimes there's, you know, taking a bit of time out to give to someone else to help them on their way, and then that's returned to you. There's definitely things. I mean, I've got a lot that I can offer to teach to kids, and you know, from an observing perspective, you know, I might see the opportunities when someone's curious about one of those things that I can step in and say, hey, you know,
okay,
why don't you have a try at this?
So it's not a case of today we're doing this?
No, not really. I mean, there's definitely moments. This week, you know, it's been a bit wet. We're going to do some cooking. But it's not, no one has to do cooking, you know. The kids, if they're keen, they can think of a meal that they'd really love to cook. And it's actually a fire tending sort of exercise and challenge. So they've got to build and tend their fire. And there's many different types of fire. Cooking fire is a particular type of fire that you need to build.
Well, okay.
You don't need to build, but it definitely makes cooking easier. So that's, you know, something I'm offering as a theme for this week. And
That's quite a different thing for the kids growing up in the smartphone era, where everything's available at the push of a button, to be doing. I presume to make a fire that's good for cooking is one that's not a raging, flaming mess, but where that phase has happened, and then there's still a lot of heat, but there's not so many flames.
Yeah, nice, so balanced.
So a lot of patience.
A long-lasting, balanced heat.
Yeah, and so a lot of patience to get to that point.
Yeah.
You can't push a button and be there.
No, it's a lot of work and it's a lot of support, you know. It's, for a lot of the kids, doing that alone is quite hard. You know, they might team up and help each other.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them will need a bit of support from one of the older kids or from me to, you know, to get something happening. But
I was just thinking of the contrast between that and the push button life that they're mostly coming into now. I think a lot of people would appreciate that, see that as quite significant.
Yeah. And the beauty of it is when you get, you know, you get a few little stations around and there's maybe four or five, six little groups of kids or kids on their own building these fires and really focusing on it. But the beauty of it comes where they're not just focusing on their own fire, but there's just this culture of like, oh, they're struggling, you know, I'm going to go over there and help them. And that energy, it feels so safe and so nurturing, and that's not necessarily, you know, me doing all the work. It's you know, me sort of holding the space, but the kids themselves being really caring and helpful and supportive to each other. And from that sort of foundation, some really deep learning and some really deep growth and development can happen. And I guess that's, you know, the key. I'm not really trying to be efficient with what we're learning.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really information that I'm too interested in. It's just those deeper aspects of ourselves which actually sort of fundamentally change who we are and how we live our lives and how we navigate the world and how we interact with each other.
It's not so measurable.
It's not. And that can be a challenge for, I think, for anyone sort of holding this sort of classroom. I know the days if the kids go home with a, you know, they've made a wooden knife or they've made something which is a cool thing to show, those days are often regarded as, you know, oh, you had a good day today, because there is something to measure by it, there's something to bring home, and like, that's awesome, you've done that today. But, you know, realistically, you can't really measure. The measurement is your interaction with your children and I guess the happiness and the stories that they're telling and the passion that they've got about the things that they're doing in their life.
And you might not see, I can imagine some things that you might not see a benefit until they're adults, for instance. There's a kind of, it might
I don't
bring a groundedness or something.
I don't see the benefits in a way. You know, I really value when one of the parents comes and says, oh, you know, and tells me a story from home. And because I'm not really teaching the kids in, you know, in a conventional way of teaching, and you know, I'm giving them the foundation to learn, and it's kind of up to them to take away what they want to take away. I'm not really like, oh, you need to learn this today. I'm sort of offering things, and I never really know which of those offerings are sort of taken on board by the kids.
You must feel that that's an important thing to provide for kids as a contrast perhaps to the rest of the learning world that they're in. I mean, is that part of what's motivating you to do this?
No, I don't think. I mean, I haven't really been part of the, you know, the more, I feel like, the mainstream education.
Apart from going to school yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that was a long time ago, and that was on the other side of the world. And I feel it's, you know, definitely some similarities, but...
Well, some people from your side of the world came here and implemented a lot of their stuff over here, so...
It is true.
Yeah.
It is true. But I feel in some ways... I think every classroom's, you know, must be different in school, and every kid's experience must be different, and I don't feel I know enough about that. You know, I haven't sat in different teachers' classes and things to necessarily make that call of, oh, I need to counterbalance what these kids are lacking in their classroom. Because, you know, no doubt is that there's a lot of connection which happens at school. You know, for a lot of families, I think that's a part of school, to be around those different kids and to navigate those sort of social challenges as well.
But we've talked about not being efficient and learnings that are not measurable, and schools have to be efficient and measurable. Like, they really don't have a choice. Yeah. Everyone working up there, that's the environment they're in. So there is something different you're doing. So what's the motivation to bring that, or what's the benefit you see from bringing that?
It's always, I guess, a lot of my life has been quite heart-led. You know, it's been led by what's felt right. And I think for me, and I guess if you asked me this 5 years ago when I started Kuta Tower, I might have given you a different answer there. But just, I mean, I feel I'm a mentor to the kids. Well, not, you know, it's not just kids that I work with as well. But the role as a mentor isn't to necessarily get people to be who you want them to be and to learn the things that you think they should learn. It's to support them to be the best version of themselves and to get where they want to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I'm really doing my best to do, to listen to them and to support them and to celebrate them and celebrate who they are. And it's, you know, that can be quite simple. A simple process to do, you know, not putting expectations or pressure, and yeah, just sort of nurturing them and giving them a friend and you know, hopefully things I can inspire them with and to support them with, you know, when things are difficult. And I feel, you know, from that foundation, like I said, that's, you know, everything else becomes easy. They're safe and they don't need to be anyone else. They don't need to try and impress anyone.
Yeah.
They can just feel, oh, this is who I actually feel good being, and this is what I'm actually interested and passionate about doing. And this is my day and this is my school, you know? Like, this is my day to do what I want with it, and therefore this is how I want to spend it. And it might be sitting under a tree chatting to mates about, you know, whatever it might be, which is, I think, is part of understanding the world that they're living as well, sort of part of the process. Yeah, processing the way they play. Recently, they've been playing a lot of shop games. You know, they set up a shop and they go finding, you know, a whole heap of treasures, and it might be a piece of wood or different leaves or a flower.
Shop games are really common with kids, aren't they?
It is. Yeah. And I think there was a time, you know, when I probably started up, where I had more of a fixed idea of what Nature Connection should be, and, you know, I really valued really stretching and developing your sensory, you know, capabilities and your awareness and your, you know, sort of knowledge of place. But I feel, you know, we live in this world, and games like that are really the kids processing what it means, you know. They see it all around us, you know. The shopping comes in every day, and you know, it's really a world where money is quite an important part. And I'm really inspired to sort of observe the kids play that, because they got such a better financial system than we do.
Do they? Maybe we should get the finance minister to give your kids a call.
It's great to see and to let them play that and to, you know, create that meaning of money for them in a sharing and a kind way, and you know, there's no greed and there's no real ownership. It's like, oh, you don't have it, I just have this, or oh, I've got more, so here, have some of mine. I think that's great, and I think if a lot of kids played those sorts of games, you know, and then grow up with that sort of understanding of you know, how to value things, that would be great for the world.
Yeah. Hey, folks, we'll be talking to Robs, or Rob Jones is his mother Christendom, and Kura Taiao, Nature Connection. That's all your stuff. You got anything coming up, any weekend events that I could ask about?
Yeah, certainly we do. We've got on the 23rd to the 25th of September, so a week on Friday, our Native Ways Weekender, which is what we've run it annually. We'll probably do it every 6 months, and that is a weekend of community and fun and challenges and activities in the Purongia Forest Park Lodge. 2 nights away, all ages.
Yeah,
you know, lots of families come. You don't need to be a family.
Can we look up Nature Connection or Kura Taiao to find?
Where can you find out about that? We can find us on Facebook. I've rebuilt a Facebook page for us whilst we work very hard on our website.
So that's Kura Taiao.
That's Nature Connection. Aotearoa.
Okay, there we go. That's what you want to look for, folks. And thank you for coming in.